Okay, today I'm going to be talking on the, there are two chapters. The one I'm really going to focus on is, entitled Mental Equivalence. And I will be quoting a lot from both the Science of Mind textbook and this book as well, because it kind of says it all. So I'll start out with a quote. One of the most necessary things to remember is that we cannot demonstrate life beyond our mental ability to embody. We give birth to an idea only from within ourselves. You are the thinker. You are the creator of thought patterns. You are the master of your fate. But you must first exercise this mastership. So this is not a theme that is unfamiliar to all of you. We all know that we're the creator of our lives, that as we take charge of our thoughts, that we have the ability to change our lives. So I was thinking back to when I was first taking religious science classes at the Celebration Center in Falls Church. There was a student there, his name's Jeff Cochran, who made fun of the term mental equivalent. And he said that was his least favorite term. And to be honest with you, it's a little bit of a buzzword because it's not something you and I use in a everyday speech. When is the last time you said, I have a mental equivalent of that?
Tuesday.
All right. but the term always made me think. In fact, when I opened my Science of Mind textbook, it naturally falls open to the chapter entitled Mental Equivalence. So we're going to have a little pop quiz here. I want a couple people to tell me what they think a mental equivalent is.
I love the term.
Okay.
When I first heard it, it turned a lot of lights on. In other words, let's say you want a car, but you can't really afford it. You can get the mental equivalent. That all that is not the car. It's not about the car. It's about the feeling that's the car. Mm-hmm. So what the term basically is, it's not about the thing itself. It's about the feeling you get. So whether it involves anything, you know, money, health, relationships, it's all about the feeling. It's always about the feeling. Mm-hmm. So that's why I like the term. It's it takes you off the focus of something that you think it is, and puts it on what it really is.
What's that?
It's always about the feeling.
Does anybody else want to give their definition of mental equivalent before we get started? And Gail,
time.
it's not fair for you to answer.
I heard you. For me, that's the first time I'm hearing this term, and it feels very logical and scientific. So what does that mean? And my mind automatically went to an exact equal. So if I'm feeling happy, I get happy. If I feel sad, I get sad. You know, an exact equivalent is how I interpret it. So I'm eager to learn the definition.
Well, that's you guys have pretty well nailed it. Maybe we can all go home now.
I've been paying attention.
So at the back of the textbook, the Science of Mind textbook, there's this glossary with definitions. I'm going to read you the definition. Having a subjective idea of the desired experience is we bring ourselves to a greater vision than the range of our present concepts. We can then induce a greater concept and thereby demonstrate more in our experience. And I read that and I go, oh my God, that doesn't tell me anything. Doesn't really tell me much. So, but there's lots more. And here's a really, I think, a clear statement from Holmes. He says, if we know that the power with which we are dealing is principle and not personality, if we know and believe that the mind is the only actor, cause, effect, substance, intelligence, truth, and power that there is, if we have a real embodiment, then we can demonstrate it. If we lack, if we are poor, if we are without friends, if we are without opportunity, we should be sure to erase from our consciousness any sense of lack. We erase thought from consciousness by pouring in an opposite thought. I love that. The thought that meets the other, it neutralizes its effect. It rubs it out just as we rub a chalk mark off a board. We must maintain a constant, positive, aggressive mental attitude in the truth. And I love that, aggressive mental attitude. And both Gail and Ricardo kind of talk about that, you know, every day. You know, you kind of cleared your heads out and said something good is going to happen today, no matter the way it seemed, because I know that probably it didn't feel so good when you were going through it. But there's always that anchor, and you maintained a persistent and aggressive mental attitude in the truth, knowing that we are prosperous, that we are well taken care of beyond belief. And I just love the idea of a mental eraser. He goes on to talk about if we have a limited expectation, then our results are limited, of course. But if we increase our expectation, we get bigger results. And there's some place in the textbook where he talks about a cup holding our vision of what's possible. And if we keep enlarging the cup, we keep getting bigger and bigger results. So the first necessity, aside from having a mental eraser, is to have faith. That, and the example he gives is of Jesus with the crippled man in the Bible, where he says, "Take up your bed and walk." And Jesus not only believed it was possible, but he had it in mind that this person was actually capable of responding, and he actually did. He probably, you know, I'm not Jesus, so I don't know, but I would imagine he envisioned this person getting up and walking, and he did. That is a mental equivalent. So, I don't know why, but I was thinking about mental equivalents a lot when I was taking a trip with my friend Edith. Now, Edith is a metaphysician, and we've known each other for probably close to 30 years, and our husbands were best friends, and they're both gone now, but we like to take trips together every once in a while. So we were taking a trip to Tangier Island. So you have to leave from a town called Reedville, which is way out at the end of the Northern Neck in Virginia. And so I'm coming from Silver Spring, and it's rush hour. It's rush hour. And I decided that I was going to have a mental equivalent of myself on the boat and having a good time talking away, because Edith and I will literally talk all day long. So, and the boat is just kind of extra added scenery. So I was running late, and so I called her and let her know I was coming, and she says, "Oh, you'll be here in time, don't worry." Like I said, she is a metaphysician. And so I got there maybe 10, 15 minutes late. But by then, we were going to have to really push it from our meeting place to get to the far point of the Northern Neck. And as we were driving along, you know, we kept talking about how wonderful it was going to be on the boat and to eat soft-shell crabs on Tangier Island, because it is, after all, the soft-shell crab capital of the world. And we were really looking forward to that. So we kept talking about how wonderful the trip would be. And there were a lot of cars in our way. It was like a two-lane road. And so there are all these cars that were going a lot slower than we were. So we just kept talking about how great our trip was. And sure enough, the cars had moved out of the way. They'd either turn off the road or maybe they'd pull off or something. But we had no problem getting all the impediments out of the way as we went along. And we got there, and we were right, got there about the time the boat was supposed to be leaving. And what happened was that it was waiting for us. So we were so blown. But we had a plan B, too. We figured no matter what, we are going to have a fabulous time, because it's not often that we get a chance to explore the Northern Neck. So we were going to be fine. We knew we'd get our money back. There was really no loss involved. No matter what, we were going to have soft-shell crabs, and we were going to spend the day talking to each other, and we were going to be around the water, which we both love. So that was another example of a mental equivalent. Because we had the ideas in our head, and we'd been holding them for months. Every time we get together, we talk about our wonderful trip to Tangier Island, and it actually worked for us. And I was very conscious in talking to her about mental equivalents, you know, because I had to prepare for the talk. And so we kind of decided we would manifest this wonderful trip, which we did. There's a 1926 edition of the Science of Mind textbook that I really like a lot, and it has a meditation in it. It says, it shall accomplish and prosper and shall not return unto me void. My word is the law unto the thing whereunto it is sent, and it cannot come back to me empty-handed. I sent out my word, and it is the law unto my life. So the other piece of it, besides having faith that when you say something, it's going to happen, is also knowing that there's a law out there that says when you say something, when you conceive of something, it must happen. So then you may ask me, well, okay, I've been praying for $1 million. And I don't have it yet. So what's important to remember is that our consciousness unfolds incrementally as a rule. And you don't normally make a leap from maybe making $10,000 a year to $1 million without probably increasing the size of your cup, so to speak, as I mentioned earlier. So that's an important thing to remember, is that typically, because we don't really have a feeling for what it would be like to have $1 million, at least I don't right now. And but I do become more prosperous the more I focus on my own prosperity and the abundance in my life. So you often hear people talking about life is going to be better when I have a new boyfriend, or girlfriend, or I buy my next house. I get a new job. Oh, that's the one. The job is the one that always gets me. Because if I spend time thinking about how much I hate my current job, I know that even if I do get another job, I'm going to hate that one as much. Because I'm taking that consciousness from where I am today to my next job. What were you going to say?
Does that go on the internet?
Yes. Yes. So be careful what you say. Did you want to say something?
No.
Okay. Okay, tell us your story.
No. You were saying you hate your job. I'm just wondering.
you're verbally saying that.
Oh,
okay.
Yes.
Like for your job.
I don't hate my job right now.
Oh, okay. Now you don't. Okay.
But I hated my last job.
I got you.
I thought my last boss was an idiot. And I was just burned out on my old job. And so what I did was I was over in Europe visiting family with friends, and I worked deliberately every day on what I like about my job and just creating, you know, the parts about my job that I really like. When I got back, I had a new job.
Wow.
And I really like it a lot. I'm getting to do the things in my current job that I wanted to do in my old job and couldn't. And so it's amazing. But it took daily practice. It took daily appreciation for the things that I did have, and it worked out, and I really like it. So this would also work for homes. If you don't like the house you're in, or if you don't like the relationship you're in, if you take that attitude into your next relationship or home, you're going to have similar problems. So it's really important that you increase the size of what your mind can hold and appreciate. So, as he says, for those who have thought small thoughts all of their lives, a very good practice is to dwell upon the bigness of the universe. Think about how many stars there are. Think of how many fish there are in the seas, and how many grains of sand on the beach. Think of how big the ocean is, of the immensity of space, the bigness of everything, and the grandeur of everything. So, you know, it really gets down to the fact that we do have control over the circumstances in our lives, and that, okay, maybe it's a stretch to go from I hate the relationship I'm in to my ideal relationship. So maybe what you can do is you can look up at the sky at night and you can go, oh my God, look at all these stars. And what you can do is you're gradually increasing your ability to appreciate what's around you. You just keep working that and working it and working it, and gradually change comes. So it's amazing how it works, and I can tell you, it works without fail. So I'm going to be concluding with another quote from Holmes, and I want to also say that we're taking a break early, and what we're going to be doing afterwards is we're going to do a little meditation, and then we're going to, we all have our personal cups that we want to enlarge, and so we're going to be working on that. So here's some more from Holmes. This is from The Thing Called You, the book that we worked with last year. I believe with a deep inward calm that my word of faith is the execution of spiritual law in my life. I know that my word penetrates any and every unbelief in my thought. It casts out fear, removes doubts, and permits that which is enduring, perfect, and true to enter into my consciousness. I have complete conviction that my thoughts are not only true, but that they will be carried out in my experience with mathematical certainty. I have absolute reliance upon the law of good. I know that the spirit, which is life, is present everywhere. Like the air I breathe, it presses against me on the mountaintop, in the valley, the desert, and on the ocean. It is ever present. I accept this presence with complete confidence. I believe that the law of good will bring everything desirable into my experience. Today, I proclaim my divine inheritance. I am rich with the richness of God. I am strong with the power of God. I am guided by the wisdom of God. I am held in the goodness of God today. And so it is.